This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us on your preferred podcasting platform. Welcome to TPF Live, episode number 73, and I'm your host, Rob Tiansen. Pleased to have you all joining us on this special edition of the World's Fastest Hour of Racing Talk. Normally, I'm joined alongside Nathan Solomon, but he has a night off due to prior commitments. So I am joined alongside our special guest co-host, Jasmine Jazz Sharp. We're happy to have you for our post-Gateway pre-Sonoma edition of the Podium Finish Live, which will, of course, delve into all the craziness that happened at Gateway over in Madison, Illinois, or St. Louis, for you geography nerds. Talk about you, Roger Carruth. And also to talking about a late breaking news that happened on Thursday evening that certainly is compelling to talk about before we get into all the fun talk about Sonoma. And then, of course, towards the end of our show, you'll hear from NASCAR Xfinity Series competitor and also connoisseur of the Italian food variety, Anthony Alfredo, driver of the number 78 BJ McLeod Motorsports Chevrolet Camaro ZL1 entry. I am not being paid to say all of that, so I'm just doing a solid for Anthony. But anyways, folks, as always, TPF Live is powered by SpoilerDiecast.com, where you can find all the latest and greatest diecast cars. We'll talk about why you should be shopping with our partner here very shortly, but right now, let's go bring in Jasmine Sharp, because I know she has a lot of information and opinions to digress about Gateway, things that are happening between Sonoma race weekend. Thankfully, no Alpha Prime haulers blowing up or having issues like last week, because if you folks are feeling like you've had a case of the Mondays, you should check out Tommy Joe Martin's Twitter account tweets from last week. You will feel like your Monday was more like being at a Christmas party. But anyways, Jazz, how are you doing today?
Well, thank goodness it's not Monday for me. speaking about poor Alpha Prime Racing, for those not informed, they lost a hauler and two trucks, I believe, on their trek across country. And the last one died about 200 miles from the track. So NASCAR had to actually help Tommy Joe and their crew. Thank goodness none of the vehicles, like, that were inside the cargo and all that was actually damaged. But talk about worst nightmare scenario. So I'm just happy we're at Sonoma. It's not Green Sonoma, okay? I'm a diehard fan of Green Sonoma, but I can't complain. So glad to be here, man.
I'm glad to have you around. I'm glad it's not Monday yet, because we're not ready for Monday just yet. We're a bunch of Garfields on this show. And yeah, that makes me want to have lasagna. But right now, I don't want lasagna. I want you all to hear about SpoilerDiecast.com and why you should be shopping there as you listen to our show. Hey, racing fans, are you in the hunt for the latest and greatest in diecast cars? Head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com to get the latest offerings in Lionel Racing, NASCAR collectibles, IndyCar collectibles from Greenlight Collectibles, and much more. If you spend $20 or more in-stock or pre-order items, you can save 5% off your order and get free shipping with promo code TPF. So head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com, spend $20 or more, and use promo code TPF to get free shipping and 5% off your order. Evan and his team get those orders out fast in lightning speed fashion. A proud sponsor of TPF Live. The great news is Lionel's shipments have been arriving quite a lot earlier than anticipated. It seems like, you know, the effects of the pandemic with logistics are improving a little bit by bit. You know, we're not having ships stuck at sea like last year, where Lionel was goofily tweeting about, oh, does anyone want to volunteer to rescue wave number 7 or 8? Go ahead and do so. Thankfully, a lot of these 2023 124s and 164s are here at last. And in fact, I'm holding a 164 car from this season. Well, you can't really see it on my screen. You can't even see it at all, folks. But just imagine you can see me in my familiar black and gray baseball shirt, and I'm holding a diecast car from 2023. Yes, folks, it's pretty cool. What a concept, right? An in-season car released before the halfway point of the season. Oh, man.
Incredible.
What will they think of next? It's incredible. But we do appreciate what Lionel Racing does to help businesses like SpoilerThatCast.com so that Evan and his team can definitely make sure you're hitting all the money or losing all the money because you're spending it on great diecast cars. But
yeah, I mean, you're saving with deals, though, and that's what matters.
Yes, exactly. And hey, they're a partner of TPF, so that's what we got. You know, the like drivers, and they say, I want to thank this and this. Well, I don't do the whole, I want to thank SpoilerThatCast.com and Evan and his team for setting up a good podcast, but I did it for you guys. So anyways, SpoilerThatCast.com, promo code TPF for 5% off and free shipping for orders of $20 or more. That's not a lot, I don't think. But anyways, before you contemplate about money or go into your Bank of America app and talk to Erica, don't talk to her. Hang out with us because we're going to go into putting perspectives. Now, literally, before we started recording our show on Thursday evening, we were informed by Legacy Motor Club that Noah Gregson would not be racing this weekend due to a concussion he sustained in that very grinding crash towards the latter point of last Sunday's Enjoy Illinois 300 at the Worldwide Technology Raceway at Gateway. The hit was quite similar to what Jimmy Johnson experienced at the 2017 Pocono Spring Race that a lot of folks felt kind of changed Jimmy's trajectory with his career and his health, really. And Noah certainly took quite a hit. And we're all hoping that Noah gets better. We know that he's not having the best season, but now it's just adding insult to injury for him to have this injury. So concussions are seriously things to be careful about. And we hope Noah has a speedy and full recovery so he can be back for Nashville in a couple of weeks. But with that, Grant Enfinger will be taking over the number 42 Sunseekers Resort Chevrolet Camaro ZL1 for the Savemart 350 at Sonoma Raceway. So he'll at least get to make his Cup debut at last after 12 years. And hopefully gives a good finish for Legacy Motor Club because they need something good to happen to them. Because on top of that, Eric Jones' number 43 team got penalized 60 points after NASCAR took their number 43 car to the R&D center and found a few things that they were not exactly okay with. And NASCAR's been pretty much hammering these penalties because of these next-gen cars. Let's face it, these are spec series cars for the most part, and you can't get too creative about them. And whether intentional or not, you know, NASCAR is being consistent about levying these L1 penalties. Specifically with Eric Jones's car, the issue with it was modifications to the greenhouse. So it's basically the rear section of the car near the roof, and you can't really like distort it. It has to be exactly how it was delivered to you from the manufacturer. So it's pretty black and white, and they got a little gray, and just like Linda Grain Dallas, they lost. I'm sorry, it's a Dallas joke. But anyways, let's hear from Jazz before I talk about who shot JR and all of that. You know, Jazz, it's been a really bad week for Legacy MC, and it's too bad because they really could use a little bit of good news. With now they don't have Gregson. They've lost 60 points for the number 43 team. You know, at what point does the rain stop falling for them?
Well, first of all, I feel awful for Gregson. I mean, of course, the news did come late, but for those not informed, concussions, sometimes the symptoms and all that don't show up for a couple of days just because the brain in the way that it is and all that, at some it's like bones, fractures and all that, right? Sometimes you don't see the fracture right away. You have to let it kind of do what it's going to do, sit there. I feel bad for Gregson because this was his first full-time season with the Cup Series. I mean, this kid went from racing over at JR, winning, just living the dream, to basically like struggling from week to week, which I don't want that for anyone. And this kind of goes back to us speaking about, oh my gosh, maybe 10 episodes ago, talking about the bodies of these cars again and all that, because there's drivers getting hurt again. I mean, earlier this season, we had Alex Bowman get injured yet again. He's the one that got the concussion from last year. So the fact that he had this vertebrae incident, which I'm glad that he has recovered and he is back in the car, but nobody wants that. To have Grant in the number 42, Grant's an honest, hardworking individual. I mean, this guy, he kind of emphasizes to me like the American dream, going from like not really well known, kind of just on the bottom of the barrel, to like where he is today. Very hardworking, very, very good guy. So I feel like he's going to do his best to ensure that the 42 team does well in Sonoma. For legacy overall, I will say there was some positives. There was a positive this week. Eric Jones went to his hometown track of Berlin Speedway up in Berlin, Michigan. Love that track. Wonderful short track. Great for local racing. He won the event there, got $10,000. Not only did it happen on like the anniversary of his father's death, 7 years after the fact and all that, but for him, it's a big moment. I mean, he was going through a lot. He was making his way up through the NASCAR series at the point that his father passed away and all that. And for him, I feel like it was a proving point. Eric hasn't had a great year this year either. I mean, last year he won Darlington. He's a master at that track. And I feel like for him, this is a sign of saying, hey, keep fighting, keep pushing and all that. Legacy Motorsports, I feel like they need that encouragement. They have the tools. They have everything there that they need. I feel like maybe there's a spark or something that they need. And I'm hoping with Eric's win and all that, that's the tiny spark that they need to be able to push on and, you know, get some wins, get some good finishes and all that. I hope nothing for the best for that entire organization.
Yeah, it's always good to see the Legacy MC, because they are basically the continuation of Richard Petty's team to do well, because it was a great story last year in the Southern 500 when Jones won that race with all the shenanigans that happened within the last 20 laps of that race. But the 43 winning at Darlington is just so kismet. But it would be even sweeter, of course, if they make the playoffs. One thing that is on their side, of course, is NASCAR got rid of the whole top 30 rule. So, I mean, you could have the crappiest season to date, but if you make all 26 starts, rather, and, you know, you've at least finished, you know, not finished, but at least you've made it. You started those races and you get a win before the Daytona regular season finale. I mean, man, that might get you in, because at the rate we're going, we're going to have a lot of repeat winners. And you just never know when that one victory can be so crucial enough to get you into the playoffs, which means more money that can be allocated to the team. Of course, the driver are getting some money too. And momentum. Momentum's always something that's very indelible in any kind of sport, especially in NASCAR. And Legacy MC could use any kind of positive momentum at this point, because aside from Stuart Haas Racing, I would say they're the hard luck team so far of 2023, at least on the Chevrolet side. So I will say this, though, about Grant Enfinger getting to drive the 42 car this weekend. I think it's going to be a fantastic opportunity for him. And I don't want to say too much as to why I know about this, but let's just say word on the street was I may have had an interview with him recently. So for you fans at home, you will get to hear from Grant Enfinger in the upcoming weeks of TPF Live, because he will be a future hot seat interview. But he seemed like a driver who was totally okay about racing in the Truck Series. It's his home. But to be in the Cup Series, at least as an emergency driver, I'm sure he would rather have it in a different circumstance, but it's a good opportunity nevertheless. It's a chance to showcase what he can do. You know, obviously, I think the objectives will be bring the car home in one piece, try to finish on the lead lap and log some experiences that could help out the 42 team, because they could use a little bit of some positive mojo before we get to the Father's Day weekend off. So we'll watch for that story and a lot more that will happen at Sonoma, because of course we have Cornell Chu and Aaron Brink who will be on site for that particular race weekend. And I would be remiss if I don't thank Bobby Krug and Travis Haston on the job well done covering the race weekend at Gateway. And of course, Wayne Regal for the excellent job at Detroit for the IndyCar race weekend. So just want to give them boys a little shout out on that. But yeah, yes, Legacy MC, we definitely want to see them have better times ahead. Now, one thing I can tell you, though, about Gateway was it was a tale of two stories, mostly brake rotor issues aplenty. So if you like that kind of thing, unfortunately, it was a frequent sight for a lot of front-running contenders. And then actually a driver who was making his cup debut while running inside the top 20. And then the other story was Kyle Busch returning to his dominant form. I wrote an article on Wednesday night that basically backs up the fact that the Kyle Busch of old is back. And it was his 19th most dominant victory of his 63 Cup victories. That's pretty impressive when you consider a lot of those dominant victories happened towards the beginning of his JGR tenure. And obviously now he's in a new team with RCR, but obviously on the older end of the spectrum as far as drivers are concerned. But the fact that he led almost 50% of the race is just like crazy. It's really difficult to dominate in the Cup Series. So there at least it was that good news on that side of things for you rowdy fans at home. But yeah, I mean, that was a crazy race. I would say it was honestly, I thought it was a better race than last year, but that's just my opinion. But Jazz, what did you think of the Enjoy Illinois 300? I don't want to say, did you enjoy the Enjoy Illinois 300? But I just did.
Holy tongue twister.
Yeah. Let me say that again, just because I want to amuse all of our audiences. Did you enjoy the Enjoy Illinois 300?
So I have some gripes. I do. I know. One, because when the brake issues did happen initially, I thought, hey, maybe it's just, you know, that one or two time case incident. But when it happened to more than multiple individuals, and then we also had to like red flag the event a couple times here and there and all that, that for any fan, nobody wants that to happen. And also like that does kind of stop the momentum of a race and what's going on with it. I will say I'm proud of Mr. Busch, like saying that, but sadly I did not get to partake in the free cheeky tenders and all that because the closest Cheddar's is in Charlotte. But I will say it's great to see not just him come back and become so dominating again in the field, but for RCR as an organization itself. I mean, yes, Austin Dillon, he does have his streaks where he's great and all that. I mean, he's really good at super speedways, I will say that. But to have somebody there with more experience, and I feel like that kind of added a spark to Austin. Austin seems to be performing a lot better overall. Those two seem to complement each other very well. And I think that's what they needed over there. And it's not just for them over in the Cup Series, but looking over at the Xfinity Series, they have some really good rising stars over there with like Austin Hill and Sheldon Creed. I mean, it's what they needed, right? And I can't wait to see what else happens. I thought the racing overall was really good. Like I said, I wonder how much NASCAR is going to delve into the brake issue, because like I said, it happened to multiple people. And that top 20 car you're speaking of, that kid, what's his name again? Carson Hocevar, yeah? I think I know him. He's over at the Nice Motorsports camp over there, riding number 42. He did great for his Cup performance, like for his premiere and all that. And it is a shame that he went out the way that he did early. It wasn't even his fault. So I really do hope that he's able to hop into a cup car again sooner than later, with good circumstances, of course. I don't want anything bad to happen to anyone else, you know, never want that. But I think he did really good. I mean, it's really nice to see up and coming talent being able to just adapt so quickly. And I think that has to partially do with the fact that Carson's been trying out so many different types of vehicles. He's been at Millbridge recently with the sprints. I believe he's up in Eldora. At the time that we're recording this, it is late Thursday evening, but I believe he's up at Eldora right now, testing his dirt skills right now as we speak. So good luck to him in that endeavor. But I really appreciate that all these up and coming like NASCAR stars are testing out different type of vehicles. They're willing to get experience in different fields and all that, because that does help you. It might not, dirt and concrete might not sound like the same exact thing, but it teaches you how to handle cars better in the craziest of situations. So I think the race was better overall than it was last year too. I just hate the brake factor. That's the number one thing for me, because I don't like seeing drivers' safety get, you know, put at risk in any shape or form. And just the red flags that we did have at some points during the race and all that, that did kind of put a halt to what we were seeing and all that with the racing actions. So
it was a little too long because of the fact that the red flag for the lightning delay was almost 2 hours. So I know that we were saying in our team chat, Dylan was saying, "Oh, I've seen this before." And I was just like, "Oh no, we don't want to see this again. I think we need a normal race that's under 3.5 hours, like maybe 2.5 hours, because typically, you know, a race that's 300 miles shouldn't take that long." But it's not the fault of, you know, the staff at Worldwide Technology Raceway, Gateway. I mean, they can't control Mother Nature, and they certainly have no control of these brake issues. But it was a shame to see that happen, because honestly, if you eliminate those out of the equation, I thought it was a really good, you know, solid race. I wouldn't say an instant classic like Kansas was, but I mean, you're not going to have, you know, that game-stopping moment kind of a race. But I would say it was a solid, you know, early June race. And it's promising to see, because if this was a good race, we didn't have the softer tire package that is supposedly coming its way to New Hampshire next month, then we're in for a treat with this flat track program and the short track program of races coming up in the summer. So well done overall by the Gateway staff and the teams for putting on a good race otherwise. And yeah, Carson Hocevar, sensational talent. It just seems like whatever he gets into, like you mentioned to your point, he adapts so quickly, and I would have loved to have seen how it would have played out. I am not, like, again, Carson's not like texting me asking me to say this to you, the audience at home. I personally think he would have finished top 15 in that race, and yes, I would have. Yeah. I think he would
absolutely.
Have beat, I think he would have beat Corey LaJoie in that race, which would have been an interesting debate.
Yes, you speak of that, and I'm just like, oh no.
Just to think that, because I mean, I know Corey was feeling a lot of pressure to fill in for Chase. That's a tough situation for any driver, and I gotta hand it to him for giving it his best. I mean, he's not in his own car. He fulfilled a wish that he made 3 years ago, but it's tough. But, you know, kind of like Connor Daly, Corey LaJoie, sort of the same personality, you know, he's very popular with the fans, the underdog driver. You obviously want to see him succeed. And I will say, until the brake issue showed up for Carson Hocevar actually kind of drove the 7 car a little bit better than LaJoie did. And that's saying a lot, because LaJoie's having a career year in the 7 car. No slam to him. He's having a good season. But Hocevar, driving a car he's not familiar with, not even made for his seat, like, to do that well, I mean, Spire Motorsports better put this kid in an Xfinity car next season, if they're not, because I know
somebody better. I'm just saying, somebody better.
Right, because we've got quite a few free agents in the truck series. Roger Carruth, namely, and then of course Carson Hocevar even mentioned, I think, that he's looking for something for next year. And I'm just thinking, this is asinine. This kid should be driving a competitive ride in Xfinity at least. So as Benny Parsons was heavily endorsing Greg Biffle, I may do the same thing before Carson on this show. Yes. So all about Team CH and supporting those Wolverine staters, even though I'm not from Michigan. My co-host is, I'm not making fun of you, Nathan. I know you're busy. We hope to have you back on again soon.
Miss you, man.
But Jazz is doing a great job in your absence. So, Anyways. Now that I got my villain laugh out of the way, it's time to talk about some happy stuff for a change as we get into the second half of Podium Perspectives. So we know that this is the last race for the Fox crew, and no, that's not happy news. We're not dissing on them, but it is.
I was going to say, oh my goodness.
I know, that was such a bad transition. I know. I love the Fox crew because I got a few buddies on the network. But anyways, I digress. Double duty efforts are going to be happening again this weekend, but this time it's not Truck Series and Cup. Xfinity is racing its way over to Sonoma for the very first time, and I've been wondering why we never had them in the first place at this track, but finally we are. And in terms of drivers who will be double dipping, like George Costanza at a party, Ty Dillon, Daniel Suarez, AJ Allmendinger, Kyle Larson, Ty Gibbs, Eric Almirola, and Ross Chastain are all going to attempt the double duty effort. My goodness, it's going to be a stacked field. Yes. And it's going to be interesting seeing some of these drivers in either regular Xfinity Series rides, and they're basically ringing their way over as a road course specialist, or in some cases, seeing them driving for their mothership program in the Xfinity Series, namely yes. Ty Gibbs and AJ and Larson driving for their respective operations. To be honest, I don't know how much you can learn from an Xfinity Series road course race for Cup, because for starters, Saturday's DoorDash race for the Xfinity Series will be held quite a bit later than the Cup Series race. The DoorDash 250 not getting the green flag until just about after 8 p.m. East Coast time, or basically 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Basically my bedtime. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, basically all of our bedtimes, really. Yeah, seriously. Way to go, Sonoma. I'm kidding. And then the Cup race will be getting the green flag just shortly after 3:30 p.m. East Coast time, which roughly makes it about 12:30 Pacific time. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what could be learned. I guess reps can't hurt, but I don't want you to exactly give away your pick, because this might be your winning time pick for the last part of Podium Perspective, Jazz. But how do you think it's going to shake out with these double duty or double dippers, if you will?
Let me pull up my stats here.
All right, Larry Mack.
Just slamming on this keyboard. Okay, great. All right, we're great. So a road course is a road course. I know this sounds weird. That's how I'm going to start this, but any okay. practice you can get on a road course is good practice. Yes, the Xfinity car and the Cup car are two separate entities, right? There are differences. Yes, the races are starting at different times. I mean, the track is theoretically going to behave differently because of the different times that the races are starting. But I mean, it's something you want to memorize. It's with road courses. That's why I feel like NASCAR, that's why we like seeing NASCAR vehicles in general race at road courses, because they're just so unpredictable. I mean, like, you can't race a road course the same way every single lap. Like, it's just impossible. Like, it would take a robot to be able to do that, just because of how different it is from every single lap. And I feel like for veterans like AJ and Larson and all that, I mean, for them, like, that's a weapon. That scares me just for the fact, because AJ and Larson, even Chastain, they have proven that they are really good at road courses. Drive the bestest, as I joke. But I think for Xfinity drivers, like up and coming ones like Austin Hill, like I said, who has done phenomenal this season, we have brought that up. I know there was a point in time in history where one, the Cup Series drivers could drive in the lower divisions as many times as they wanted. And then, of course, they have changed that regulation. They've made it, I believe, 5 races, if I remember right. Don't quote me on that. And I get that. But at the same time, to have an opportunity to race against people that hopefully 2-3 years down the road, you can actually race in the series. I mean, it's an opportunity to see what they're doing, their strategies, what they're using for the lines and all that, and just get a better feel of where you are within the competition and all that. I love the fact that like the Cup Series drivers are going back in racing the Xfinity Series, because for me, I feel like that draws in more crowds and all that. There's a reason why with the North Wilkesboro races, other than it just being North Wilkesboro, but we had Dale Earnhardt Jr. racing and partaking, and we had other Cup Series drivers partaking in the events and all that. People want to see that. They want to see their heroes face off against the new blood and all that. That's such an appealing thing. And there's a reason why it's not just that, but like, that's how drivers like Eric Jones were picked up and all that, were facing against people like Kyle Busch. And Kyle was like, this kid has incredible talent. We need him, right? It's that chance to prove who you are. It's the chance to get sponsors too, if you think about it. And let me tell you, sponsors and money, crucial, especially with a sport like this, where it costs thousands upon thousands of dollars just to make sure that these vehicles are functioning and operational. I know I said this early in the broadcast, Rob. I love Green Sonoma. I love Green Sonoma. I wish they'd had that. But just, I'm not complaining though. Sonoma is a gorgeous track up in the northern parts of Cali. I am just, the fact, you are right, you brought that up. Why hasn't Xfinity raced here like sooner? Like, what is, I'm not complaining though. I will never complain. Like I said, I'm just saying for those watching, because I feel like if I bring up my choices this weekend, I curse every single driver. I swear. Like, I have cursed. I didn't do it the past weekend because I had a really bad stomach bug. But I swear, I probably would have picked Kyle Busch because I love Kyle. And he probably would have wrecked, like, lap 5. And I would have been like, well, it's not that I wanted harm against him. But that's just how it's been for me this season. So for those watching on TV this week, next year we get Kevin Harvick joining the booth for Fox, so I'm excited to see that first of all. But as we transition like we do now from Fox to NBC, and we can see Parker Kligerman touch the track more to see if it's wet or not, I'll mess with him about that. But I just think this is a great way for the Fox crew to just end the season and all that. It's going to be really exciting racing. It's going to be unpredictable, and I'm excited to see what the results will produce. So,
and we get to see Jamie Mack in the booth with his pompadour. Yes. So that's always a good thing. And honestly, I love racing at this Serpentine racetrack. That's not my words. That's Hendrick Motorsports' press relations officer's wording of Sonoma. And I love that. So I'm going to use that too. Serpentine road course. Or as Kyle Larson called it, very flowy, like my hair right now. So there we go. Anyways, talking about those double dutying, double dipper types of drivers. I mean, you said it yourself, Jazz. You know, AJ, Kyle, and Ross are going to be really fantastic. Obviously, Daniel Suarez, I know he's going to be driving for the 07 team, but you have to kind of imagine there's going to be a little bit more beefed up RCR alliance with that car. He's not going to just drive some kind of SS green light race car. But it'll be cool to see. I just love seeing kind of like Ross and Daniel not driving like the mothership car, but some kind of Xfinity series related car. So yeah, that should be interesting to see how they'll fare. I'm sure they're going to be just fine. This track certainly is, it's interesting. This is going to be, of course, the shoot layout version, or as it's called, the club circuit version, which is the 12 turn 1.99 mile edition of this track that has been around, well, originally since 1998, modified in 99 and then eventually put into its final layout in 2001. And Kevin Harvick, oddly enough, is the race lap record holder. He has gotten around that track in about 1 minute, 16 seconds, and 854 thousandths of a second.
Which, so basically, I am curious. I hate to interrupt you, man, but which car was that? What gen was that? A Gen 4 car, or was that like
the Gen 6? So Gen like 6. The Ford. Yeah, so I think that was probably the last year. I want to say the last year of the Ford Fusion being used. If that's, wow. I know it seems like a long time ago to call it a Ford Fusion.
It's not Ford Taurus, you know what I'm saying? You know, you're really throwing it back when you
I want to say Taurus, you know. Ford Fusion, that's an obscure model right there. But yeah, the 1.99 layout, this is a good one. But I have made it known that if I had it my way, we would be racing the original carousel layout, but I digress. Sonoma is awesome. Sonoma in green would be even better. They used to do that when this race was held in early May, right after Talladega. So like after you've had your head basically wrung from all the craziness, from headaches of just trying to strategize which lane to pick at Talladega, then you have to take on the road course at Sonoma. But at least it was beautiful.
Yeah.
That. But it's been a staple of NASCAR since 1989, and a lot of good memories of this racetrack. It's now basically going to be celebrating its 35th anniversary this year, but it'll be 35 years next year since its maiden cup race, which I don't quite remember because I didn't get into NASCAR until 1991. But suffice to say that in 1989, that was a that was an interesting little race. And then, of course, who doesn't remember 91 when Richard Petty flipped over? End over end. I mean, poor guy. Towards the end of his career, had some bad wrecks, but Sonoma was one of those ones. That was the year before he decided to go on the farewell tour, or the fan appreciation tour, as he still calls it. But at 89, of course, Ricky Rudd was the winner. I'll just quickly go through the race winners, and then we'll go to winning time. So yes, since 1989, in chronological order, been Ricky Rudd, Rusty Wallace, Davey Allison, Ernie Irvin, Jeff or Jeffrey Bodine, whatever he goes by these days. Ernie Irvin again, Dale Earnhardt, Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin, Jeff Gordon twice or three times in a row. If you remember, he was the road course warrior or king. Yep. Tony Stewart, Ricky Rudd again, Robbie Gordon, then Jeff, Tony Stewart, Jeff again, Juan Pablo Montoya, Kyle Busch, Casey Kane, which that's such a, I don't remember the 2009 race. That's going to be, I need to watch that on YouTube after the show.
Yeah. Now that you bring that up, that kind of.
That's an oddity. I don't think I don't think of Casey, and no offense, Casey Kane's a talented driver, but I do not think of him as a road course specialist.
No.
So I don't, the fact that I can't remember this one, I need to watch this afterwards. But obviously, I do remember Jimmy Johnson winning in 2010 because Marcos Ambrose will remember that for the rest of his life, unfortunately. Yep. Kurt Busch, Clint Bowyer, Martin Truex Jr. on the first of his three victories at this track, Carl Edwards, Kyle Busch again, Tony Stewart again, Kevin Harvick, Truex twice over, Kyle Larson, and Daniel Suarez. The only time we didn't race at Sonoma, of course, in the Cup Series was in 2020. That, of course, being due to the COVID-19 pandemic, which forced us to see a lot of repeat tracks over and over again. But anyways, as for my thoughts on Double Duty, I think it's going to be fun. I do think it's going to be down to a Xfinity Series regular and a Cup Series regular. As to who I'm going to go with, we'll talk about that right now because it's winning time. So, of course, during this portion of the show, or almost a potion on the show. Oh, goodness.
Yep, the potion.
The racing potion. I've been playing a lot of Zelda 2 lately. This is the portion of the show that Jazz and I, normally Nathan and I, would make our picks. So I'll let Jazz make her picks for the DoorDash 250 and the Toyota SafeMart 350.
I'm going to state this like I did beforehand. I am not trying to curse any of the individuals I am about to name off. I like these individuals. I wish no harm.
No harm.
I think for the Xfinity series, I think it's going to be a cup driver. That's going to get it. And it's not because I don't think that the Xfinity series doesn't have any talented people. I mean, like I said before, earlier in the podcast, you have some great talent that's coming through the series. I'm excited to see what they do in the cup series, but I think it's going to be between Ross, Larson, and AJ. I can't really say which one will outlast the other because one, Ross is chaotic. That man is very chaotic with his strategy. So knowing him, he might pull something magical that maybe the other two aren't going to really like. AJ tries to race as cleanly as he can, but if he does reach a breaking point, we've seen this before, he will race rough. And Kyle's pretty clean overall, but he does get in his own way sometimes. And I think that's kind of the downfall, right? We all have our own weaknesses. But if there was an Xfinity driver, I'll say Austin Hill. Like I said, he's great. He's cool. I appreciate his ability to just conquer any type of track at this point. Cup series, that's where it gets really difficult because, like I said, you also got like Byron's going to be in the mix. You got, well, Suarez too. I love Suarez, but I feel like there's just going to be so much chaos with the Xfinity race that I feel like something's going to happen to him. Man has magic skills with road courses, but I think this is going to become a clash between several of the Chevrolet teams overall. As much as I like the Toyota camp and Ford camp, I know we have people in there like Joey Logano, we got Blaney and all that. And then over at the JGR camp, you do have people like Ty Gibbs, you know, Denny, Truex, like I said, they've proven themselves. But I think this is going to be, for the Cup Series, a Chevy battle. Just who can duke it out with the Chevys. I mean, that's, you got HMS. And HMS, as Rob read off on that list, this guy named Jeff Gordon, yeah, he multiple-time champ. And that Jimmy Johnson guy, yeah, multiple-time champ, you know. I'm just saying, like, they have their craft down to just thousands of inches / centimeter. I mean, they get it. They know what they're doing. There's a reason why HMS is still feared to this day. And even hearing their name, it's like saying Mufasa in The Lion King, right? Mufasa, HMS, HMS, oh no, you know, it's, you have a lot of great rising talent. I wish, and I think this has to do with his injuries that he's had, like this year and the last year, Alex Bowman. I feel like I wish he could have his spark moment. Like, he's doing all right. Like I said, I'm glad he's okay. But I think this is going to really, I think it's going to, I don't know what Chase is going to do. Hey, guys, guess what? Chase Elliott's back.
Oh, he is? Yeah, you didn't,
I know. Yeah, weird, right, Rob? I know.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know.
Oh, my gosh. So now that we have that Chase Elliott guy in contention, we know he can do road courses very well. I think it might be a Byron moment. I really do. Byron seems to be able to, I mean, he has made some mess ups this year, you know, bumping into people he shouldn't be bumping into, but he seems to keep himself level headed out of the group the most. Like I said, I feel like Chastain might be too chaotic. Suarez isn't as aggressive as I feel like he should be sometimes. And I feel like that's let him have a couple of wins slip away because of that. And AJ, poor AJ, he's going to get bumped probably by Ross in some shape or form, get spun out into the gravel pits. And then you and me are going to be screaming at the TV, even though we're like half of the country away from each other, but we'll know. I'll message you. So that's my pick. Yeah. You'll know.
Well, at least you're not cursing everyone. You're just picking a bunch of drivers.
Yeah, no, just the Chevy camp. You're right.
Chevy
just
camp. If I'm Spock from Star Trek, I would have to apply some logic here. That means I better pick some Toyotas and Fords. No, I'm kidding. Now, obviously, for the Xfinity Series race, it's an inaugural event, so nobody's the defending winner. So, that being said, I just looked at COTA because I was at that race just to give myself a refresher. And the highest finishing Xfinity Series racer in that event was Sammy Smith, who had finished in the fourth position. And then Justin Allgaier, Hemric, Mayer, Barry, and Creed and Herbst rounded out the top 10. So honestly, yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, if AJ Allmendinger is in this race, you pretty much have to say he's going to win the Xfinity Series event. I mean, the guy got wrestled around with in COTA, and he still found a way to win that race despite getting wrecked several times in that event, found his way to victory lane, beat William Byron, and that was such an amazing showdown between him and Byron. I loved how back and forth it was, but it's so clean when those two race each other. Yes. So this time around, he's got Kyle Larson in the 17 car, which is going to be even more interesting because we know how much Kyle Larson is motivated with his homecoming at Sonoma. So I'm going to say it's between those two. I am going to go with AJ because he seriously needs a little pick-me-up on the NASCAR side of things. I know the Cup side, if you listen to his radio, the poor guy is just having a tough season. And that's,
yeah, put
that's
the sensor bar. The sensor bar in there for a couple.
I mean, and AJ, we both tease each other, but bro, man, you would easily win Radio Sweetheart on TPF Live if they still had that segment. So I think he will be a factor on Saturday's Xfinity Series race, which again will be during bedtime. So that's gonna be an interesting experience. But then on the Cup race side, of course, Daniel Suarez is the defending race winner, and he was pretty competitive and fast. I will say that Kyle Larson didn't do himself any favors last year. Well, not really his, well, partially his fault and partially on the team's fault as well when they didn't quite tighten up a tire. And I think it was the right front tire that decided to become Lucille. Basically just before you get to the shoot, and that basically gave Cliff Daniels a month off from NASCAR. This year I do think HMS will be taking it a little bit more seriously. They obviously showcased a little bit more speed at COTA, but you know, COTA and Sonoma are totally different tracks. COTA is very much forgiving on some aspects, where I think Sonoma, don't get confused by the fact that this is a short track type of road course. It is still very technical. It still requires a lot of being very conservative on equipment in the early stages, because if you go a little too hard, then you may find yourself running out of brakes, or you might find yourself getting a bad break in a three wide situation in the chute. So, honestly, yeah, AJ would be the easy pick on this one too, but I know at Sonoma, he didn't quite have the easiest day at that track and got into an accident about 15 laps short of the finish. So I think you got to look at Tyler Reddick for Sunday's race. I'm not just saying that because it's a Toyota Safe Mart 350.
Yeah.
He's been a really good road course racer, honestly, since his days with the number 8 team. And that honestly reminds me that Kyle Busch is also a good road course racer, because he finished runner up in that event at COTA. And honestly, when I named those drivers who won at Sonoma in the past, Kyle Busch is a past race winner there. He's won there twice, 2008 in his first Gibbs season, and in 2015, which I honestly think that race is what got him motivated to win the championship that season. So between Reddick and Busch, who happened to be the top two finishers at COTA, I'll go with Kyle Busch, because when I did a little research about, him having dominant performances, he tends to have them consecutively. So look for him to basically make his case to be the number one position in the playoffs this early in the game. Shocking, right? I didn't pick Kyle Larson. I know. Shocker.
No, I'm not criticizing you on that at all. I, like I said, I I think, in all sincerity, I think this week is really tough just because of there's just so many good picks. There really is. So, what for y'all who are listening in and all that, please tell us your opinions down on our Twitter and all that. We love replying back. We love hearing your guys' opinions because sometimes there's points that we don't even think about that it's the eye-opening moment. So please just follow us on TPF. What is the Twitter? I forget. It's like TPF Motor, not Motorsports, but TPF.
Just plain old the podium finish.
Yeah. But we'd love to hear your guys' opinions on that when we do drop this, which I'm hoping tomorrow or early Saturday, maybe.
Either way, before the green flag for the DoorDash 250.
Hyped. It's a good time.
It's a great time. So yeah, tweet to us at the podium finish. Jazz, of course, is at Jazz653086, and I'm at Rob Tiongson. And if you still want to tweet to Nathan, even though he has been quite busy with other things that are going on, and he's NSolly02. So we'd all love to hear from you. And if we happen to pick, you know, a random tweet that actually makes sense, it's not like, I don't know, Steve Park was the most underrated driver in Xfinity. I don't mean that kind of tweet, but something, you know,
wow,
relevant. I mean, he was underrated, but, you know.
Rusty Wallace will win this race. Yeah, see, something like that.
Rusty Wallace. Oh, goodness gracious. But yes, if we happen to pick a tweet, you know, observing the race that's really cool, or, you know, you share something neat with us, I just may send you over an in-stock 164 stock car from Lionel Racing. I didn't say 124. I was like, ooh.
Okay. Whoa, that's like championship end of the year.
Yeah, that's a bit of a championship gift to the fans. Lord. I'll at least give a stocking stuffer, okay? 164s are cool. Mm-hmm. You get to put them on your desk, and they're just fun to look at.
Make pretend car noises with them like I do occasionally.
I might do the same thing myself, to be honest. So, yeah, fans, that's Podium Perspectives this week, because right now, I think it's time for some pasta with the hot seat. Now, for this particular segment, I would normally throw it over to Nathan because he is actually the one who conducted this interview for us during the Dover race weekend, which seems like years ago at this point.
Yes.
But during the deluge at Dover for poor Mr. Solomon, he had the opportunity to interview Anthony to talk about his season, how things are going over at BJ McLeod Motorsports, pretty much get more of the tale of his story in NASCAR. So with that, I think it would do better justice if you guys just hear from Nathan in his segment for this week's Hot Seat with Anthony Alfredo. So, you know, just to start, obviously, you know, you're coming over here at VJM in 2023. Just what's this experience been like, you know, switching teams and joining this team?
It's been great. You know, it's taken a lot of hard work, and there's still a lot to be done. Just for us as a group, obviously, all my crew members from last year came with me, which meant a lot to me. They believed in me enough to go out on a whim and do this, because we all knew it would take a lot to turn this program around, but it really wouldn't be possible without all of our partners and BJ and Jessica themselves as team owners giving us this opportunity and as many tools and resources as they can for us to succeed. I feel like we're doing a lot with a little, even more so than last year. So it's just been, it's gone pretty well. I feel like the start of the year went about as well as it could. The last few weeks have been pretty rough result-wise, but speed-wise have been really good. So we just need to focus on getting back to finishing races, you know, how we should, and climb back up the point standings.
You mentioned your team and your crew coming over here with you. So has that made that process of transitioning over here a lot smoother?
Yeah, it definitely made the transition a lot smoother, just because we already had all that chemistry, you know, so we knew how to work with one another, what we expect out of each other. I think the only hard part was the equipment's different. So some of the things we learned and had built a notebook on last year is a little bit new. You know, some things correlate, a lot of things don't. But I feel like we figured a lot out in just the first few races, and we're kind of, actually just now starting to hit our strides, even though the results may not show it. But we just really need to build up an inventory of cars and parts and all that kind of thing. You know, that's been the hardest part, is we've been playing catch up all year, really, since the start. So it's been really hard, you know, for us on that side of things. But everyone's been doing their part, plugging away, and, you know, we just keep getting better.
What kind of stood out about this place that made you go like, hey, I want to be here, I want to drive these race cars, I want to race for these people?
Well, honestly, it all started when I had, you know, number one, a team and group of guys that believed in me last year. I wanted to keep working with them somewhere, even if it wasn't under the same roof. But Jessica and BJ, I can't say enough about them. They're super nice people. They're very hardworking. They believe in me and our team as a whole. They believe in each and every one of us, all the guys in the crew, myself, and they want us to succeed. And it pushes us to want to succeed and do well for them, because this is probably the first opportunity they've had to be at least this competitive at this level, and you know, without an alliance or anything like that. So it's rewarding, and that stood out to me. Having people who support you and believe in you and want to grow with you is probably the most important thing in this sport.
And following up on that, just what's it like driving for BJ and Jessica? How much have you enjoyed just that aspect of it, working with them?
It's great. I mean, just the relationship we've had so far is awesome. Obviously, they let me drive the cup car a couple times as well, which was huge to get experience in the next-gen car. I enjoyed that experience. Hopefully, we can do more of it. And they're just good people. You know, we've become very friendly, and professionally, we have a great relationship as well. So we're getting closer to that first win. I thought Talladega was going to be it. We definitely had a car fast enough to do it. It just wasn't meant to be that day, so we'll just keep sticking to God's plan and giving it all we can every week.
For you, change has become pretty customary. You know, you've essentially been with a new team each year of your career. So how difficult is that as a driver, and how have you kind of learned to embrace that?
That's been one of the hardest things in my career, because it's always, you know, halfway through the year or by the end of the season is when you build up that chemistry and all those things, notebook, that are critical to doing well. So coming back for a year two is where you see a lot of improvement for anyone in any series. And I haven't had that opportunity yet, but we've had partners that are willing to stick with us and, you know, follow us wherever we go and keep supporting me and my team. And this year is probably the first time I have had the opportunity to work with the same people. Like I said, it's under a different roof and equipment's a little bit different, but we have the same core group of people and just different owners that have been a pleasure to work with, though. So this one hasn't really felt like I was starting over by any means or with a new team.
So it didn't feel that new at all?
Not really, no. I mean, the biggest thing is, like I said, just some of the cars and stuff like that was different, but we were all doing it together and already had that chemistry built up and got along. Jessica, BJ, and I clicked right off the bat, so it didn't really feel like I was starting over. It felt like this is the first year I've had the opportunity to work with the same people, really.
Have you noticed any of the changes with the cars, like in terms of the rear end housing or the rear end skew changes, or has that not been a factor so far?
Yeah, that's definitely been a factor. I feel like it may have hurt the smaller teams even more. I don't know if the racing's we'll see. We've only done two intermediates, I think, so far, Auto Club and Vegas. So we'll see if they keep getting better. Vegas was kind of a weird race. The groove didn't move around as much. I think dirty air and traffic's way worse than it was. So we'll see how it does. I mean, the racing might get better. I think more people are going to figure more stuff out, for better or for worse. You know, maybe we'll figure some things out and get caught up, or the big teams are going to get further ahead. I'm not really sure yet. But based off that Charlotte test, it definitely, aside from what it does to the racing and the competition, I think in general, yes, it's very different to drive at the bigger, faster track. So that's played a factor. And when I was talking about the differences in the cars, it wasn't even just that is a huge factor. The rules package changed, the rear end housing and stuff. But I just meant, you know, the equipment they have, the parts, the pieces, the chassis are all different than what we had last year.
So you think this race is a little bit more like an intermediate tomorrow, or more sort of like a short track?
No, this place to me is definitely like an intermediate, just because of the speeds. I think it rubbers up like a short track, but it's as fast as an intermediate. So we'll see how that plays, you know, a factor. We were pretty solid here last year. We qualified 10th. We ran around the, you know, top 12, 15 all day, finished up there. So hopefully we can replicate that. I mean, this year there's probably three or four better cars than there were last year, cars that didn't exist last year. You know, there's two Jordan Anderson cars. They're a really solid team, the 25. There's another, there's a couple other teams that have, a second Stuart Haas house car. And then the 78, us, you know, we're a this was a car that wasn't a top 15 car last year. So it's even more competitive than last year. And last year I said it was probably the most competitive the series has been in a decade. And it's even more than that now. So we'll see. If we could just have a quiet, clean day and come home with a solid result, we'll be happy.
And you touched on it earlier. You've had that consistent speed, that top 15, top 20 speed to start the year. How would you evaluate everything so far, you know, nine races in?
Honestly, the speed's been solid. You know, I think it was a couple of weeks we missed it or had mechanical issues and just stuff we need to, you know, goes back to building up inventory on parts and learning more about the cars we have and stuff like that. But, I mean, the speedways, we had a shot to win Daytona. We had a car fast enough to win Talladega. Qualified top 10 both those. Atlanta, we led like 20 laps. That was a huge weekend for us just to show that, you know, we're not here to just ride around. We're here to race and we're a competitive team. So we've built up a lot of confidence from some of those runs. And I think we're all very, you know, content with the speed we have had. But we know there's a lot more work to be done to be, you know, a top 15 consistently, especially if we want to, you know, make the playoffs. I mean, I think at this point, for anyone, it really takes a win to make it. If you're not running top 10 weekly and scoring stage points every week, you pretty much need to win a race to be top 12.
Is it more frustrating for you the way Talladega ended, or is it more encouraging in the sense of knowing that you have that speed and you guys are right there at tracks like that?
It's bittersweet. You know, like, there's literally nothing we could have really done. We got shuffled back after that first pit stop and got caught up in the wreck, so that was really disappointing because we had a race-winning car, like you said. I mean, the 27 won the race when we were leading. He couldn't even pass me. He couldn't get a run on me. So we were as good, if not better, than them. And you know, some of the other cars we consistently see up there at those races. So it felt really good to know we had a fast car, but it really stinks we didn't, you know, We were all focused on winning the race, but even just a top five or heck, a top 10 at that point would have been a hell of a lot better than wrecking and finish 38th or whatever it ended up being. So that was disappointing. You know, we needed to capitalize on having a car that fast and having a level playing field because we don't have that 90% of the time. But that's super speedway racing. That's just how it goes. So I think, like you said, it was a confidence builder. We know we could be fast in those places. We did already after Daytona. So we're just going to have to, you know, focus on replicating that and executing at Daytona, but up until then, you know, we'll just keep making our intermediate short track program better and just trying to be a consistent contender.
And when you look at some of those, I guess, wild card tracks, right, you have a few more super speedways left, you have seven road courses, both, you know, types of racetracks you've always ran well at. So how much of an emphasis are places like that for you guys going forward?
It's definitely a focus. You know, the speedway, the problem with that is, you know, we go there and say, oh, we could win this race. Well, so does everyone else in the garage. But we actually had a car fast enough to lead and hold people off. So I really think that separated us from the rest. But the road courses with the no stages, I don't know. I think the strategy as far as when you pit and everything is almost the same as when we had stages. So I don't know if it's better or worse with no stages. Maybe we can strategize ourselves into a better finish depending on an oddly timed caution, save a set of tires, fuel mileage, who knows. We did build our road course program up a lot last year. We became, you know, a 10th to 12th place car at least on the road courses. So if we could do that here, those are weekends we can definitely capitalize on. I think short tracks as well. I mean, before I blew a right front tire at Richmond, we were the fastest car on track when it happened. So I think short tracks, road courses, super speedways are the focus. Intermediates, I think we talked about this last year, maybe even. Those are always a priority for a small team on improving because you're at the biggest disadvantage there. It's all about aerodynamics and downforce, and, you know, we don't have any of the tools or resources the bigger teams have that make them so dominant those places. So there's a bigger gap for sure that we need to close. But I think focusing on those other races to go capitalize on and get good finishes is important.
How's it been for you getting back in the Cup a little bit? Obviously, a lot different than the last time you've been in Cup with the next-gen car. Is that a bit of a culture shock in a sense?
I actually really enjoyed it. You know, running at Richmond was a blast because with that tire, or with that place with that much tire fall off, I think we had a shot to run, you know, pretty well. We ran top 30 all day. I had a speeding penalty on the final stop. That cost us that finish. But a top 30 had been a great day for LiveFast. And then we went to Martinsville where pretty much replicating that until the right rear wheel came off on the final stop. So That was disappointing, the end result in those, but we finished, you know, ran clean races, and I learned a lot about the car. I really enjoyed the challenge of it. Totally different. Literally zero translated from anything I knew about stock cars. It was just fun to do it at tracks I'm familiar with and pretty good at, so I could focus on learning the car. I think the weirdest thing was if I was running around 30th and Cup with the old car, you'd be a, you know, 1.2 or 1.3 seconds off the leader. Now you're running 30th and you're 0.2, you know, 2/10 or 3/10 off the leader. It's crazy how tight the field is. And it's like impossible to pass. Dirty air and everything was horrible. It felt like I was at an intermediate, but it was Martinsville. So I think that car has some of its own nuances that are hard to overcome for everybody, let alone a smaller team. But I enjoyed it, and hopefully I get to do more of it for sure. The double duty was cool. I've always wanted to do that.
And really just last thing, just what are your goals for the rest of the season, and what do you hope to accomplish here at BJM?
Win and make the playoffs.
Awesome.
Keep it simple.
And that was Anthony Alfredo, as interviewed by Nathan Solomon during the Dover race weekend, which I think that's the reason why Nathan's not on the show lately, because the poor kid is still drying out from that race weekend. And now the Northeast is in the middle of a crazy drought. It's crazy, right? Because like Dover, we were all complaining about wet weather and it's too soggy, and now the Northeast is in a drought. So good times, not really, but Nathan's been busy with other things that are going on. We understand. And whenever he's back, he'll be back. Jazz will be here too. I'll be here too. But yeah, with that, this is the last podcast until the Father's Day break. We'll have another episode next week, of course. And then we'll throw it over to the NBC side of the NASCAR season, which kind of, these next 20 weeks will kind of feel like, you know, when you're in your senior year of college or high school or, you know, master's program, and you're just like, well, senior year of master's, that's an oxymoron. But anyways, yeah, the 2023 season is flying by.
It
but
is.
Let me tell you, folks, next week is going to be a fun episode. So obviously it's Father's Day. So fortunately for me, I still have my dad around. He's going to be celebrating his 78th birthday as this podcast drops. So happy birthday, Dad.
Hey.
And yeah, he's not Anthony Alfredo's car number. So that's why we put him in this week. Not really.
But oh, my goodness.
I wish that was the way it worked. But yeah, happy birthday, Dad. And it'll be Father's Day weekend next weekend. So he's a lucky dude for the next 2 weeks.
My dad's birthday is on the 21st. So it's a small world, man.
These June kids, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Oh, and look at their kids.
I know. They're probably wondering, what did we do right?
I mean, I'm sure with my father for Father's Day, we'll be arguing still. And it's been 20 plus years at this point of who's better, Jeff Gordon, Rusty Wallace, or Tony Stewart. I'm sure it'll be, that's what we will be doing for Father's Day. So,
well, I think it'll be a prime rib kind of Father's Day, but we're not quite at that point yet. So I'm going to try to work out so I can have some room for that meal. And of course, IndyCar is racing next weekend. So we're not totally devoid of racing. And I do want to say that's what I'm excited for as well, is that episode number 74, you'll get to hear from one of the hot icons of IndyCar. And that, of course, would be Patricio Pato O'Ward from Monterrey, Mexico, by way of San Antonio, Texas. So he's kind of one of the homeboys of Texas, like me.
Super excited, yes.
I'm excited to have him on. As you folks know, he was an interview last year on TPF, but I don't think he quite, for some reason, we didn't have him on as a guest on TPF Live, but we will this time. So it's going to be cool, and I will drop a video version of that interview in segments as well. So if you want to see the visuals and just watch why my hands move around a lot, like Steve Kornacki, at the board during election season, which I'm sorry, no jokes about election. I know. But I'm like Steve Kornacki when it comes to my interviews with my hands. So you should see that. But Pato's going to be on, and I'm excited for that. And then we'll have Alexander Rossi not too long from now afterwards. So super, super cool. And I do want to say who we'll have for future episodes. So Carson Hosevar will be here as well. And then, of course, Grant Enfinger, Raja Carruth is going to be back on the hot seat as well.
Yes, we love Raja. Yes.
Oh, Raja is going to be, oh man, that is going to be a fun interview for you fans at home. Oh boy, oh boy. Long way from the kid that I interviewed back in 2020, but I'm very happy for him and how much he's accomplished. And then, of course, we're going to introduce you folks to an up and rising stock car sensation in his own right. 17-year-old race car driver Landon Lewis will be joining us. Yes. He obviously won the ARCA West race at Portland last weekend. So kind of cool to have a fresh face on this show, and he'll get to talk about his journey in racing and much, much more. So exciting times on TPF Live. So I know if you're used to the Robin-Nathan combination, that's still around. The Robin Jazz version of TPF Live is also just as cool. TPF Live in general is just pretty cool, but we've got a lot of great guests coming. So it's like Lollapalooza, except you'll remember everything, I think. I hope.
Let's hope.
Let's only hope so much. But for my final thoughts, of course, the only thing I want to say is thank you, Fox, for at least a better season of coverage in 2023. I am actually going to miss the "I'm telling you" phrases from Clint Bowyer, and I hope his voice this weekend's a little bit more polished, because last weekend I swear to God I felt like I had to gargle a salt water whenever he spoke. My God, he must have had a good time at Gateway. No, I'm kidding, but we love Clint on this podcast. And yes, we should have him on because he will be racing this summer in the SRX series. So we have to hit up Mr. Bowyer about his journeys in the SRX. But my only other final thought is just happy birthday to my dad, 78 years old. I hope I look as good and drive other people crazy in a good way, like my dad at seven, when I get to be 78. He's my hero though. So I am very proud to be his kid. I am not trying to get mushy. We're not doing the mushy stuff on TPF Live.
Oh, the cheese is here. Yeah. Lots of cheese.
Yeah. Lactose intolerant, though. I know. But yeah, happy birthday, Dad. Any final thoughts you want to have on the episode 73?
Just strap in, y'all, because this season, it is about to get even more hectic and crazier than we can even fathom. So I'm excited.
I'm as excited as Michael Waltrip promoting his brewery all the time on a truck with the telecast, or as excited as he was when he found his cell phone at last.
Or he's at the right track.
Or that he's at the right, yes, at the right track.
Yes.
Yes. So I think we've got a lot of people we want to bring on the show. We'll make it happen for you folks, because you fans at home are the best fans in motorsports. So that's why we do all the craziness that we do, to have a little fresh and exciting show. And I also do want to say, goodness gracious, after this weekend, we're 26 more episodes away from episode 100. I am working on some special stuff to commemorate our milestone, and the fact that we will actually surpass the original version of the show that ran from 2011 to about 2013. Because we didn't do shows during the off season originally. But that being said, stay tuned for details on that, because as soon as I kind of figure out some special surprises, you will want to tune into episode 100. So we're getting closer to that point in time, folks. It's going to be great. You know, it's even better, the fact that we'll get ready for episode number 74, the Randy LaJoie episode, although he's not on the show next week. But anyways, let's get ready for Sonoma, because we're going to sign off right now. So for Jazz Sharp and for Anthony Alfredo, I'm your host, Rob Tionks, and saying thank you so much for tuning in to the Pony Finish Live, episode 73. For previous episodes, tune into those on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts. And again, for episode 74, we're going to have Pato Award, and we'll preview the zone CEO, Grand Prix at Road America, and of course, evaluate the almost first half of the NASCAR Cup Series season. With that, folks, as I like to say all the time, let's go get that checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everyone.